Hey, it's Ham Nation time. We're glad you're here. We are going to take you in advance to the WWV 100th anniversary special event, show you a little behind the scenes of WWV, and then we're going to talk Hamfest. Bob has been to 4 Hamfests in the last 4 weeks, and the most amazing one was Huntsville just last weekend, something that we have never seen before happened there, and we will tell you all about it and introduce you briefly to the family that caused such a ruckus. It's a great story. You don't want to miss it. And hopefully we'll have them live on the show next week. But until then, we'll just give you a little sample. That's coming up next here on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by LDG Electronics. LDG Electronics provides state-of-the-art automatic antenna tuners and related products for every amateur need. Visit LDG Electronics to learn more. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 416 for August 21st, 2019. WWV special event and Hamfest recap.
Hello, everybody. It's K9EID, Bob Heil, and welcome to Ham Nation. And what a fantastic show tonight, big time. We're so glad that you tuned in, and you should call all your friends and relatives and tell them, do the same, because we got some very exciting things going on. We've all been to Hamfest this past month, and I tell you, it's just been over the top. This hobby just continues to grow and grow and grow. And we'll have some reports here coming up. But first, let's see who is here. We have Don here. Don, are you make it back okay from Huntsville?
Yeah, I had a great trip. Drove up there and back solo. So I was listening to The Godfather on an audiobook as I was driving to and from. And it was a completely uneventful drive. It was a boring drive up there and a boring drive back. But oh, the excitement when we were at Huntsville. Oh, my God. It's in my 24 years of being a ham. And I know you've been a ham a lot longer, and we share this opinion. We've never, ever, ever seen a Hamfest grand prize drawing like this, and we'll tell you more about that coming up a little bit later on. But we've got Newsline with Tamitha Scove with her solar update and a whole lot more. It's just going to be a full show, so hang out with us. Bob?
Yeah, got some nice pictures and stuff. And look who is with us up at the front of the show, Amanda, because she's got some really cool things. Hi, Amanda. How are you?
I'm doing good, and hello out there in the chat room. If I'm not responding, it's because I'm on here first thing. We've got a great interview tonight about WWV and the special event coming up with that, so stay tuned.
Yes, we will return soon. But let's go out to sunny California, where you've been swimming and all kinds of good stuff, right, Gordo? Take it away. Let's see what you got cooking.
Roger that, Bob. Yep, the surf was up. The water was sort of warm, 65, but a great day to hit the waves. Well, this past weekend, while you folks were having a great time in Huntsville, I was on the top of a hill. So, Victor, let's go to the top of the hill and see what's going on. This was our spot for working the 10,000 megahertz contest. And this is an unusual shot, thanks to Peter, NI6E, in that it shows this lowly little park that nobody knows about, and now thousands of everybody knows about it. That's up about 900 feet, and we had communications on 10,000 all the way to Las Vegas, Nevada, Mount Potosi, as well as halfway up the central coast of California with just 2 or 3 or 5 or maybe 10 watts of power. I was solar, and we'll go to the next shot. That's Brian. And, you know, with a technical organization like the San Bernardino Microwave Society, it is always good to have like an ambassador, because the rest of the folks are busy making contacts. They don't really have time for folks that wander on going, well, what's all this about? So Brian, AF6NA, really does a great job. And to learn more about the San Bernardino group, go to www.ham-radio.com/SBMS, San Bernardino Microwave Society. And we're wearing our official SBMS hats. This is no regular hat. Brian figured out how he could get a hat that offered, I don't know, 10 or 20 dB of attenuation to microwaves, so you don't boil your brain if you accidentally walk in front of one of his dish antennas. So there I am on the left, Brian on the right, and log on to San Bernardino Microwave Society and see all the great fun that they have once a month, as well as on these operating events. Well, there's lots of things going to be happening shortly. Got one coming up, West Virginia State Convention. This weekend. So West Virginia, we hope to see you there. John, Whiskey One, Juliet Golf Mike says, Ham Nation is the best, and we want to get the word out that the Western Connecticut Ham Fest, which he calls the biggest little ham fest in Western Connecticut, is this coming Sunday, Aug 25, at the Edmond Town Hall on Main Street in Newton, Connecticut. Get there early. Doors open at 8 o'clock, and they have swaps and exhibits and testing, and they'll have everything. And next month, we'll see you on Route 66, the Citrus Belt Amateur Radio Club in San Bernardino. That's rolling it. Says special event, 20th year, September 7th to the 15th, for working those stations all along Route 66, right out our back door here in Southern Cal. Well, WWV, I've got it tuned in here. Now, we can't take it for granted, because there was a time that maybe they were going to shut it down. Well, it's now got funding, and the WWV Centennial Committee prepares for a trial run this weekend. Now, this is not the official big deal that Amanda is soon to tell you about. This is the trial run that'll begin about noon, and we'll cover a sideband and CW and maybe a digital mode. But what on HF, what they want to do is see how they can get their receivers, likely, hopefully, ICOM, with all of the passband filters to not get drowned out on the ham bands by the gazillion watt, and Amanda, you'll have to tell me how many watts, WWV transmitter that's only several hundred yards away. So it'll be interesting. They'll be on their own antenna system. They're not going to be on WWV, but it's going to be starting as a test this Saturday afternoon and Sunday. So I hope all of you will have an opportunity of tuning in. The WWV special event organizers that are getting their station warmed up for, here's Amanda to tell you more. Amanda?
Well, thank you, Gordo. That was a great introduction. And along with that, I'd like to introduce Dave Swartz, W0DAS. Good evening, Dave. How are you tonight?
Oh, very good, Amanda. How are you doing?
Just awesome. So as Gordo had mentioned, you guys are doing a test run this weekend. So there was a trivia question there. What are the wattage that WWV runs out there? What are you dealing with? What are you guys trying to avoid?
Well, they've got three transmitters, 10, 15, and I think 5 megahertz. They're all running 10 kilowatts. And then they've got the 2.5, 20, and 25, 2.5 kilowatts. So there's a little bit of power around us. And we did some tests earlier. We were watching it carefully, and there's just a lot of radio energy in the air. It's pretty incredible.
So what kind of antennas are you guys going to be using?
Well, we've got some great loaner antennas coming from STEP IR, and so we've got two-element beams, and we've also got a couple of their crank IRs. Got several vertical antennas we'll be putting up. We'll have a 160 up, an 80 as well. And we're also going to have a stacked a Yagi collection for 6 meters. We're going to be doing some meteor scatter. And so there'll be a few antennas sticking out of the ground to go along with the ones that are up there. You can see right there.
Okay, and let's talk a little bit about the actual special event. Go ahead and tell our viewers when that's going to be taking place and how many operators you're going to be having out there and how that's going to work for us.
Well, the special event station is going to start up on September 27th. That's mountain time, so it'll be September 28th, Zulu, and we'll run for 5 days until October 2nd. We want to be up for operating for a weekend and then have it open or up and operating for October 1st as well. And so it'll be about 100 operators coming from all over the country, local operators. I think you're coming up, aren't you, Amanda?
I am. I'm scheduled for that Sunday. I'll be working for about 2 hours. So I think I'm so excited. The one question I had, so WWV is not going to allow you guys inside their building to operate, but you're going to be nearby. Isn't that correct? Just right outside?
Yeah, they've got quite a sprawling property. They've got their WWVB antennas take up a majority of the land. But it's about a 380-acre site, and there's a 15-acre parcel that's outside of their security fence, which is very convenient for us. And so we don't have to worry about getting inside any security and bugging the NIST police and things like that. But we'll be able to operate right outside of that. And we will be very close to the other antennas. It's pretty interesting looking up and seeing WWVB's towers about 400 feet above you. And that's a 50-kilowatt broadcast. So we hear that too a little bit. It'll be interesting.
Awesome. Now, Gordo, I think you have a question for Dave.
I do. Dave, have you run some preliminary checks and have you determined the amount of signal strength that these huge antennas and the huge amount of power, the signal strength radiated and the capabilities of your HF transceivers to be able to operate with all of that intense power on multiple bands just hundreds of yards away? Wow, I'll be amazed if you can hear anything on 20 or 40, huh?
Well, 40 meters works out pretty good. 20 meters, it's definitely a challenge, and we'll see how things go on 20. We are trying to operate 30 meters, so that'll be also really interesting. But yeah, the radio environment is very rich, and so it'll be great. We've got loaner equipment coming from both Flex Radio and from Elecraft, and so we're really counting on a robust front end of those radios to be able to help us filter out a little bit of the noise that we're going to have. We also have lots of band filters, of course, since we're working so close, but we'll be working with some notch filters, too, to try to take out the primary and maybe a few of the harmonics as well.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you may need some of those big old Nye Viking, the old cranker tuners. Those tuners really have a nice sharp dip on resonance and hopefully a high enough stop band so you're not getting mesmerized by 5 and 10 and 15. Well, I'll be very much amazed, but this Saturday, where might we find you on 40 in the evening or maybe 20 for your test run this coming weekend, Dave?
Well, I think we'll be definitely on 20 during the day. We'll be on 40 a little bit in the evening. It really depends on how much work it takes to get everything up and running. And so that'll be a real big part of everything. But we'll try to get on and we'll put something up on our website, WWV100.com. So WWV100.com. And you can take a look right there. We'll have an announcement up exactly what we're broadcasting on. But it's the whole idea of the trial weekend is to really get a sense of what the environment's going to be like. So I'm sure we're going to be learning a lot. We've had we've gone out and looked at the spread of the spectrum and gotten a good idea where things are. And we've got some holes that we think we'll be able to operate in pretty well.
Now, wow. Dave, well, we all wish you the best. Amanda?
Thanks, Gordo.
I just wanted to know, are you going to be operating under WWZero? WWV. Is that going to be the call sign you're going to be using, or are you going to be using the club call sign this weekend?
Well, that is our club call sign. So we will be thinking about breaking that out. So listen for WW0, WWV. We'll record the logs, get them in the logbook of the world up on OQRS and club logs. So I hope we can make a few contacts. We won't be able to stay on the whole time. We'll have to be testing and getting to know the environment better.
Okay, and two more quick questions before we go over to some photos, which he has some amazing photos, you guys. So WWV personnel is going to be there as well, maybe, to monitor how this is working out when you guys are doing this testing. Is that going to happen?
We have a lot of help coming from the folks at WWV. There's a great crew up there. Matt Deutsch is the chief engineer, and I know he'll be out there helping us. They actually are helping us prepare the site. They got brought their Bobcat out today, and they got a couple ramps built for us to bring in a trailer or two. So they've been extremely helpful. They'll be on at the site as well. Since we're operating outside the security, we don't really have to worry about too much security or issues going inside of the facility.
Very good. And my last question before we go to the photos is, where can we find you guys on social media so we can follow what you're doing and see some of the updates and the pictures?
Well, we will be on Facebook, WWV 100 there, and then also WWV underscore 100 on Twitter. And so, or at WWV 100. So both of those places would be great. And then we've got our website as well. And we're making sure everything is talking to everybody else. So if you find us on one, you should be able to find the others as well.
Okay. And don't forget, everybody, it takes a lot of money to put some of these special events on, especially when they have to buy all of this extra equipment. I know that they do have their sponsors, but they're not providing any notch filters or bandpass filters. So just remember, you could go to their website and donate. Even $5 helps get this along. It helps pay for the QSL cards that you're going to receive in the mail, things like that. So let's go over those photos, Victor, if you don't mind. And maybe Dave can explain a few of them.
Well, this is our logo for the event. This is I think sums it all up. Got the really tall towers. The WWV staff will tell you that the really tall towers are actually WWVB, but this is what you see when you're looking to the north. This is a picture of a 1 kilowatt transmitter. I think this is circa 1923. So this would have been what they first started doing the frequency broadcast on, and sort of the beginning of the standardized broadcast from WWV. And upgrades as they moved to Greenbelt, Maryland. On the far left there, that's actually an oven to keep the quartz oscillators at the right temperature. This is right after they started using quartz oscillators for setting the frequency standards. So that's kind of a neat picture too. This is one of my favorites. This is when they were first starting to experiment and broadcast music over using WWV's call sign. And these are some of the early experiments that they did. This one was probably used to broadcast actually prior to 1919. In 1918, they did a test where they had an audience in an auditorium and they broadcast from a different room. So this would have been some of that early equipment. This is the 25 megahertz antenna with a whole bunch of other antennas in the distance. And so on the far left and working way around are a couple of the WWV antennas. But in the background, those really tall ones are the WWVB. We are just over the hill on the antennas to the on the left side of that picture. So, yeah, we're pretty close. And looking at this picture, this is the 2.5 megahertz antenna. And all these antennas are vertical quarter wave antennas. And the top half is the radiating element, and the bottom half, they've got radials coming down at about a 45-degree angle. And this is the split on that tower. You can see that is the top half and then the lower half. I like the lightning arrestor on the side over on to the left of the insulator separating the two elements. Yeah, I threw this in because I thought it was neat. They were using a chalkboard to keep tabs on the UT1 corrections. So there's still use for old technology. I love it. And this one I think is the 10 megahertz or 15. pretty much all these, you know, the transmitters are from the front end aren't anything other than a large industrial transmitter, the 10 megahertz primary there too. And they do have backups for all of these as well. So they've got six transmitters up and operating, and then they have a backup for every one of them as well. And it's quite an interesting operation. It's been great to go around. Now, this is the automatic tuning mechanism for WWVB. And so that is handling 50 kilowatts of power. And that coil you see in front of you is about my height, about 6 feet. And the coil in the back is the automatic tuner. And you can hear it clicking as clouds come over and the wire lengths change due to expansion and contraction. So it's an amazing facility. This is known as the Helix House, and it's about six stories tall. This is Doug Sutton, one of the operators at WWV, and he is showing the time code generator in the WWVB operation. I got to do a tour of the station back in October. And in the WWV side of things, this is the time code generator for WWV. And so this is the point where they take the cesium clock signal and they combine it with the voice that you hear. And voila, they've got this redundant. There's three different time generators in case one should fail, the others pick up without dropping a second.
All right, Dave. And before we let you go tonight, give our viewers, if they're not familiar with what WWV is important for, just give us a 30-second roundup of why this needs to be here and how it's helpful to all of the United States and all over the world, basically.
Well, WWV really represents the beginning of radio, and so there's a huge history behind it, but its importance in setting standards are tremendous. Without having standards, people wouldn't have been able to figure out where they were on the radio dial. When quartz crystal oscillators came along, things improved. In fact, they talked about taking away WWV back in 1926, but it proved to be a very popular service. It's really important. I remember as a kid adjusting radios and being able to tune them in. To me, it's Old Faithful. If you've got a radio and you can't get WWV, there's something wrong. But it's an incredible standard. The time standard, too, just the fact that we focus in on such important things like keeping tabs on the exact time fascinated me as a kid and still fascinates me today. Setting these standards are really important. WWV was really a mandate of Congress, a mandate of the Constitution to set standards, and so this is the way that we get that information out. There's a lot of us that really like WWV and would like to see it stick around.
Oh, absolutely. I want my clock set all times. Dave, thank you so much for being here tonight. We really appreciate it. And we hope your tests go well this weekend. And we hope you learn a lot and can't wait to work you when you are the special event station. Gordo, Don, anything you guys want to add before I throw it over to Don?
He's coming in loud and clear. But I have to determine it's a male voice, so that's from Colorado. And the female is from Hawaii. Did I get that right?
I even hear the Hawaii station right here in Fort Collins sometimes. So it's neat when they both come in.
That's great. Oh, Dave, thanks so much. And I'll be tuning around this weekend for you in the afternoon and evening and maybe Sunday, and we'll hear that test station going on. And we want a full report soon. And I'm sure it's going to be one great operating event. Amanda?
Yep. Thank you so much, Dave. It's been a pleasure. We've gone back and forth in so many emails that I've learned so much. With that, thanks, Dave. 73. Have a good night.
73 is. Thanks, Amanda.
Yep.
Take care, guys.
Anytime. We'll send it over to Don.
Great report, Amanda. Great interview. Great guest. It's going to be a great operating event. And WWV is such a treasure. And to think that, man, they've thought about getting rid of it. Just a crime. We're going to get to the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. But first, let me tell you about LDG Electronics. This episode of Ham Nation brought to you by LDG Electronics. Those letters may be familiar, perhaps as familiar as WWV. Well, LDG Electronics, they're the makers of the LDG automatic antenna tuners. They are state-of-the-art automatic antenna tuners, and they are for every amateur need, from high power to low power, fixed stations, portable, remote. There's an LDG tuner out there that will match your radio to your antenna using their lightning-fast proprietary tuning algorithms. For instance, the flagship is the LDG AT1000 Pro 2. It's made for high-power hams. It'll handle 1,000 watts sideband, 500 watts FM and digital. It'll tune from basically 1.8 to 54. That's 160 meters to 6 meters continuously, and it'll match Yagi's, dipoles, inverted Vs, slopers, virtually any coax-fed antenna from 6 to 1,000 ohms in impedance. Tuning time is fast, under 10 seconds. From the memory, the tuning time is under 2/10 of a second. There's also a large, easy-to-read bar graph wattmeter with two selectable ranges, dual antenna switch, 2,000 memories for each position. LDG is a cool outfit. They're a family-owned and operated company, and they're dedicated to bringing innovative and quality products to the amateur market. Their focus is on anticipating and meeting your needs and providing you with world-class support that is literally just a phone call or an email away. And all Dell LDG tuners carry a full two-year warranty. And what's even better is that it is fully transferable. So if you ever sell or give away your LDG tuner, the remainder of the warranty travels with it. Free shipping on all warranty repairs should you need it. And all LDG products, including balance and cables, are available for purchase through select resellers. So check out which automatic antenna tuner is right for you and go to LDGElectronics.com to learn more. LDGElectronics.com. We thank LDG for their support of Ham Nation. Now, let's get into the news of the week and the solar update from Dr. T as well on Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2181, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, August 21st, 2019. Newsline presented its annual Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Memorial Young Ham of the Year Award on Saturday to Dhruv Rebbe, KC9ZJX. We'll have a full wrap-up in Newsline Report number 2182 to be released this Friday. Our top story this week reports on the deployment of amateur radio operators to assist with communications in one flood-ravaged part of India for the first time.
Ham radio operators are helping relief workers in North Karnataka's Belagavi district, something hams have not previously been deployed to do in this flood-ravaged area. That according to the city's Indian Institute of Hams. Their radio communication has been based out of a variety of vehicles, including a mobile control station inside an SUV. News reports noted that 50 of the hams had been trained earlier in the month for just this kind of intervention during a mock disaster drill. And that these are relatively new hams, as the local postal department only started its amateur radio club last year.
Newsline's Jim Damron, N8TMW, reporting. More details have emerged following the tower accident that claimed the life of one ham and injured another late last month in New Hampshire.
As Newsline reported last month, a 40-foot tower collapsed on July 27th, taking the life of Joe Arizaga, K1JGA, and seriously injured Mike Rancourt, K1EEE, as the two worked to take the tower down at Mike's QTH. An update posted on the Yankee Clipper Contest Club discussion board and written by Mark Pride, K1RX, adds the following new details. Mark wrote that the general reason given for the collapse of the Roan Tower was corrosion at the junction of the hinged base short legs, where one leg had been previously repaired, but not with galvanized material. Mark wrote that the structure had become weakened, and the first point of failure was that leg. When the guy wires were removed from their anchor points, a necessary action to remove the top section, the tower became freestanding. Both climbers were 35 feet high, wearing safety belts, when the base failed. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
Unlike EAA Air Venture in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, families visiting a popular Austrian air show will get to see plenty of planes and pilots, but no amateur radio.
Airpower 19, Austria's popular showcase of talented air squadrons and solo pilots at Hinterstoisser Military Airfield near Zeltweg in the province of Styria, will not be a showcase for amateur radio. The family event on September 6th and 7th, organised by the Austrian Federal Armed Forces, has forbidden the use and even the presence of amateur radio equipment. Mobile phones are being permitted according to an announcement by the Bundesministerium für Verkehr, Innovation und Technologie in Vienna. A statement recently released from their offices notes that any unauthorized radio equipment discovered on the property will be taken away temporarily by the military. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ed Durant, DD5LP.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Jim Dameron, N8TMW, Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Ed Durant, DD5LP, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
Space weather this week continues to be a bit on the quiet side. As we switch to our front side sun, you can see the disk continues to be completely spotless. This means amateur radio operators and emergency responders, the solar flux continues to be low, so radio propagation on Earth's day side is going to also be poor. We also don't have anything rotating in through the Earth strike zone this week, so we don't have any storms on the way. However, if you look at the east limb of the sun, you do see that dark coronal hole, and that is beginning to rotate into Earth view. It's actually one of two coronal holes. As we switch to our backside sun, well, our partial backside sun with stereo, you can see the two sets of coronal holes right there. This is the pair of coronal holes that last rotation gave us a nice sized solar storm and brought Aurora clear down to Colorado. So Aurora photographers, get ready, because you've got about 2 weeks, maybe a little bit less, to get your batteries charged. And now for your Leo, Meo, Geo orbit outlook. As we switch to our low-energy space environment, these are the particles that can cause surface charging on the outside of spacecraft, including charging up the solar arrays that then can cause electrical discharges. We are getting a few injections of flux right around the outside of the geo orbits. This has been due to the fast solar wind that we've had over the last few days. It's not been all that fast, so the injections have been pretty minor. So you satellite operators, especially around geo, you could get some intermittent issues with surface charging, but most likely the effects are going to be pretty minimal. Now, as we switch to the higher energy environment, these are the particles that have more energy to penetrate much more deeply into spacecraft electronics. We originally did have a bit of a buildup just outside of the MEO orbits, but that got flushed with the fast solar wind that hit, and now we're slowly beginning to build that flux back up again, but it's not really doing all that well. So it looks like over the next few days, you satellite operators, especially inside of GEO and in MEO orbits and even at LEO orbits, it looks like things are going to be pretty good and you're pretty much in the clear. For more details on this week's space weather, including your GPS reception, emergency radio, and Aurora predictions, check out my channel or come see me at spaceweatherwoman.com.
Thank you, Dr. T. It was a shorty report from her this week, but man, some great information as always. And you can find out more from Dr. T. anytime on our Twitter feed at Tamitha Scove. So check that out. Bob, it's been an amazing, amazing time for Hamfest. I know that I've been to two here recently, July and August. You were at both of those, but I have not experienced a Hamfest in my 24, almost 25 years of being a ham like I did last weekend at Huntsville. And I know you've been to a lot more Hamfest than I have overall and a lot more here recently. So let's hear all about what's been going on with you and Hamfest, because it's been crazy. It's been amazing.
That's why I thought I'd wear my Maximum Rock and Roll t-shirt, because that was a rock and roll Hamfest if there ever was one. Wow. And it was just wonderful. I have some slides that I'd like to show you. I have about 100 because, but I'm not going to show that many. The deal is that I was at four Hamfest or conventions this month. So it's like, whoa, how do you do that? Well, we did it. And I'm really excited about it because what can you do? Let me get up here and get my other camera dialed up and we'll bring you some pictures of where we were. We started off in this event in Ogden, Utah. This was the Rocky Mountain Convention, and I can't believe how good it turned out for me, because I was way out there. Now, I was the keynote speaker at luncheon, and it was a full house, as you can see. We were very excited because so many guys were there, but the guy was there. That's the new CEO of the ARRL. And we were at the last two. The week before that, we were down in on the other coast, but I have to tell you, Rocky Mountain was really good, really good. And Howard Mickle is something else. Let me tell you, if you don't know about the new CEO, you want to find out. Then we got in the plane and went to Huntsville. Wow. I think it's Huntsville, Don. I mispronounce it. Everybody was there. I mean, everybody. ICOM, MFJ, DX Engineer. Wait a minute. Who's that? Well, that happens to be Melanie. She's always in the chat room making sure that everybody's okay. And we got to meet Melanie and Bob from DX Engineering. I think this might have been their first time to have a booth at a ham fest. This was JT and his wife, wonderful new dealers of Heil Sound. And they had a really nice display of our stuff. Gigaparts, same thing. And we had a nice display of the new parametric receive system there. And then there's Roger. That's one of Gordo's good buddies, and he was doing all kinds of things, including selling his records and record players and all that. Roger's a great guy, and LEDs, of course. Oh, good guy, good guy. We had a lot of fun. Ham Radio Outlet was there, and Mark and Steve and all the guys. It was nice to spend time with them. But what I like is the flea market, and it's a monster. Oh, my. And it's all indoors. You name it. You want meters? You want any kind of capacitor variables? There they are. And we have just a number of people that we saw that come by and wanted to say hello from Ham Nation viewers. There's Arnie. Arnie's been around for a long time, and we're so happy to get to see Arnie at some of these fests. There's one of my OAM buddies. And he was in one of my workshops, Bob, K4BKC. I heard him on the air just a little bit ago. And you want to follow those guys on AM, because we're all there, I'll tell you. But we're having a lot of fun with all of the various things that are going on at the major conventions. And what's really fun about it is that at these conventions, we have so many guys and gals come up and tell us, we learned about ham radio from Leo Laporte, and he dialed us over to Ham Nation. And I met one fellow, Alan, KM4ECI, saw him at one of the booths, and he said, I got my technician, and I want to get my general. What should I do? So I guided him over, and he bought one of Gordo's books, and soon we will have another general. So we're very excited about all of the things that are going on out there, and happy to see so many of the Ham Nation viewers at these shows. So I hope that we get to see you at one before too long. Well, I think the next one, well, we're going to Joplin. That's kind of local here Saturday, but we'll be going out to Pacificon. So maybe we can see all you guys and gals from the West Coast. So that's the story. And while we were there.
Yeah, I got some information too. Go ahead and finish that, but come back to me because I've got some fresh information from Mark, N4BCD, the Huntsville Hamfest chairman. Just came over the chat room. I want to share with you. Go ahead, finish your thought, and then come back to me.
Well, I was just going to tell you, though, one of the guys I saw was George and his camera, and he's got some things, and we'll let George bop in here and see what's happening. Go ahead, Don, what you got from Mark?
Yeah, there were two very unique things that happened at the Huntsville Hamfest. The first one that I want to tell you about has just been released by Mark Brown, N4BCD, the Huntsville chairman. When a lot of hamfests are actually on the decline, Mark just reported that they saw a 20% increase over last year. 5,000 people attending Huntsville Hamfest this year.
Wow.
Congratulations. Yeah. That is amazing. Now, the other very unique thing about the Huntsville Hamfest this year was, and pull up the picture of the Pearsons, Vic, because I want to introduce you to a great family. I want to introduce you to Jacqueline Pearson and Andrew Pearson. That is the dad in the middle. We have Blake. That is Blake in the cap. That is Blake next to his mother. And Ryan is standing there in front of Ray Novak trying to keep him in check. And that box they're holding was the grand prize on Saturday's drawing. Now, typically, when you have a whole group of hams who are standing around at 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon waiting to win a $3,000 radio, and the guy up there on the microphone calls the number or the call sign, and you hear the guy in the back or lady in the back, whoever in the back, go, "Hey, I won, I won." You hear everybody else go, "Oh, man." And then you hear, you know, grumbling, and you hear tickets being wadded up and being thrown in trash cans. When young Ryan, who is 10 years old, ran up there with the winning ticket, the place erupted in applause and cheers and clapping and whistles. I have never in my life seen a Hamfest crowd thrilled to have just lost an ICOM 7610. And then the four of them got up on stage holding that picture, and the paparazzi of hams taking pictures of this amazing family was probably about five or six deep. Now, we were going to have them on the show this week. However, as Skype sometimes will do, we couldn't quite get the Skype to work either on a phone or on their laptop. But we have a week to get it together, and we're going to have them on next week to talk to you. And I don't want to give too much away, but the family's only been licensed 2 months. Jacqueline is the only one that's not a ham. Andrew's call is KN4VKX. Blake's is KN4VKY. Ryan's is KN4VKW. So they're sequential call signs. They got their tech in June. They got their general in July. And they were walking around trying to figure out what kind of a radio to put together their first station, preferably an HF radio since they're all generals, and trying to figure out what was going to be within their budget, and they walk away with a 7610. So we're going to try to have them, do our best to have them on the show next week to introduce you to this amazing family. I've gotten to know them just a little bit here on the phone the last few days trying to get everything together. Just an amazing family, and exactly what we need to carry on amateur radio. That's the next generation. And between them and all of the young hams that I see every year with the Young Ham of the Year Award, this hobby is going to be in great hands, great hands. And I know that that George will echo those thoughts. Right, George?
Well, certainly, Don. That was a great win there. And I couldn't have picked a better winner. And, of course, they didn't pick the winner. It's a random drawing. So talk about your luck of the draw there. And, wow, a great rig to start out with, too. So what can you say? Three family members there recently licensed and shopping for rigs there. And came home with a great rig like that at the right price, free.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm so proud of them. I'm so happy for them. It's not even funny. Anyway, there you go, George.
Okay, Don. Well, I had a great time, too, at Huntsville. And, you know, I always like to go there and shop around and see what I can find unusual and usual stuff, too, and I always bring back some things. I did go by Wired Electronics and saw Roger and the people there and picked up a few items from them. And I went by Nightfire Electronics, who I visit when they're there, and picked up a few more little pieces here. You know, I like to play with those Arduinos and the Raspberry Pis. And, you know, these little modules right here make things go much quicker where you don't have to breadboard everything yourself, although you still got an opportunity to do that. These are just so cheap, and a lot of the building pieces that you want for your projects these days. And I got one of these. I've had one on back order for over a month now. Now, this is a Raspberry Pi 4 computer. This is the 2-gig model. You know, they've only been 1-gig up till the Raspberry Pi 4 B-plus came out. Or is it just a B? It's just a B. It's not a plus yet. But now they offer the 4 in 1, 2, or 4 gig. Everybody I know has ordered a 4 gig and they've been back ordered. So I did see the 2 gigs over there at Gigaparts, and I had to pick up one of those for me and picked up one for Tommy too. So got some interesting things there, and that's not all. That's just a few that were laying here on the table beside me. And I shot some video there as well, and I've got two clips to show you tonight. We'll be back in just a moment to take a look at those. But first, let's get a message from those people who had that IC7610 for the prize.
Heard it, worked it, logged it. It's time to get the transceiver that's best suited for your lifestyle. ICOM offers a variety of high-performance and innovative products. Make the most out of contest season with one of these ICOMs today. IC7610, the SDR every ham wants. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest of signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling, software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling, 110 RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. Or get the IC7300. Changing the way entry-level HF is designed, this high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Keep your competitive edge with faster processors, higher input gain, higher display resolution, and a cleaner signal. ICOM's IC7851 is the pinnacle of HF perfection. Dual receivers, digital IF filters, memory keyer, digital voice recorder, high-resolution spectrum waterfall display, enhanced PC connectivity, and SD memory card slot. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And thanks, ICOM, for sponsoring Ham Nation here, helping us keep it going. And they've got a contest going on continually. If you'd like to win, go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after this episode and each episode and register to win. They're giving away weekly prizes of T-shirts and hats, and you'll also automatically be registered for the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for August, that new radio is the ICOM ID51A+2 VHF UHF dual band dual watch D-Star portable, built-in GPS receiver, extended D-Star coverage, DV fast data mode, terminal mode and access point mode, DV and FM repeater search function, micro SD card slot, independent AM and FM broadcast receiver, and there's a free downloadable Android app as well. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after this and each episode and register to win. Sign up and good luck in the contest. And before I get into the videos here, there is one thing I want to mention, and that is Randy is still looking for your photos and descriptions of the projects that you've been working on, whatever you're building, wrenching, soldering, or welding. Send your photos and a description, no videos, please, to hamprojects@twit.tv, and you could be in a future episode of Show Us Your Projects. And now a couple of videos I've got here. This first one, we saw Melanie and Bob a few moments ago. I managed to get them in front of a camera for a few minutes and to just talk about DX Engineering's first year to exhibit at the Huntsville Ham Fest. Here's Bob and Melanie from DX Engineering, their first year you've demoed here.
Yes.
How did it go?
It's been excellent. The attendance has been great. Beyond expectations.
Bob?
I agree with that. Huntsville's a really friendly place, and I came down here last year just as a spectator and had a great time and really enjoyed the hospitality, and I went back and told K3LR, we got to go. Yeah. So fortunately, the sales tax laws have changed that we can come down here and we can have a booth, and it's been great. We've met thousands of people here. So it's a great show. Everybody should come here, definitely. It's one of the top five in the country for sure.
So you didn't bring product, and you mentioned sales tax laws as part of the reason why there. I mean, you've been giving out catalogs. How many catalogs have you given out?
Oh, a couple hundred easily. We're almost out of catalogs, actually.
Actually, about 450 right now.
Right.
Wow. And good reception then.
Oh, for sure. Our customers are very happy to see us, happy to see us donating to some of the organizations around here, supporting the Youth Forum and the DX Center last night.
Great. Well, what's the new product? I mean, what seems to be the hot new thing at DX Engineering these days? He knows.
Well, yeah, we've actually gotten a few new products that are on the horizon that are coming. Our rotator, which is coming out next spring, people are interested in that. It's going to be the best amateur radio rotator ever made. And we have the new RF kit linear amplifier, which will be a legal limit solid-state amplifier designed and manufactured by RF kit in Germany. And it's a DX Engineering specific version. Our logo is going to be right on the display, and we're really looking forward to that. Plus, there's hundreds of other things that we're adding all the time. DX Engineering has been on a growth track for the last several years, and we're continuing that way with no end in sight.
Cool. So, would you say you do more sales in-store or online?
Online and over the phone for sure. Our retail sales are good, but online's most for sure.
And I think that's probably everybody would say that.
Yes. Very easy and convenient ordering.
In the store, last weekend we had our first Ham Fest at our facility, and we hope you guys will come there next year, second weekend of August. And we had over 1,000 people show up. So it was a great time. In fact, we just had a guy come by that was there, thanked us for doing it, because he said it was one of the best ham fests he'd ever been to. And, you know, we have a large facility there, courtesy of Summit Racing. And we had a great time, a lot of people, a lot of good stuff. I was amazed. Kind of like here, you know, the flea market here is high grade. There's a lot of really good ham radio stuff. And we had the same thing at our place last week. So, you know, we had a lot of people in the store. Everybody enjoyed it. And thank goodness we had great weather. So it was really a great ham fest.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing that's different about, say, the Dayton area and, you know, Ohio and Huntsville here, is the tech industries that are in those parts of the country produce a lot of good Swap Fest stuff. There's test equipment at this Ham Fest that you won't see anywhere else.
I imagine so. With the aerospace industry, you know, being based here, there's a lot of hams here and a lot of technology companies. So, you know, the flea market is just filled, and being inside this air-conditioned facility is fantastic. So it's a great place to be. We're looking forward to coming back here every year now.
Great. Well, is there anything you want to say to Don Wilbanks that he cannot defend himself on right now?
Don did a great job with the youth presentations yesterday and the Young Ham of the Year, Drew. So I have nothing negative to say about Don. He's a great guy.
Can't you come up with something?
No, not that I can think of.
Okay. Well, Don, you got off on that one. Well, Bob, Melanie, thanks for being here. And at Huntsville this year, I know everybody here was happy to see y'all exhibit here. And we'll look forward to seeing y'all. Well, it'll probably be Dayton. I'll see you again.
Okay. We'll look forward to it, George. Good to see you.
7-3.
Thanks for coming by.
Good night.
And I'm glad that they would talk with me there for a few minutes. You know, Melanie didn't really want to get on the camera there, but it didn't take too much convincing to have her stand there. I guess since we had Bob on the other side and I could could kind of tag team them there, or they could tag team me, however. Well, you know, Huntsville Ham Fest is a great ham fest, one of the best in the South, and it has been for a number of years. And the guy who used to run that ham fest, or the chairman for years, was Charlie Emerson. He became a silent key a few years back, and we certainly miss him. He did a great job all those years. And we kind of wondered, you know, who's going to take over next? How can you step up and fill Charlie's shoes? Well, we got a guy here that is doing a very good job of that, and that's Mark in for BCD. And well, he's in the chat room tonight, but I happened to catch up with Bob on Sunday because his flight got delayed, so he came back and hung out at the Ham Fest for a while. And we run across Mark and did just a little quick interview with Mark.
Hi, everybody. It's Bob Heil, and look who I found. It's Mark. Mark is the chairman of this great Ham Fest.
Hasn't it been great, Bob?
Wow.
Oh, my God. We're here Sunday morning. We got a great crowd, but yesterday was just over the top. We had just standing room only.
You've done a wonderful job as a chairman, and I appreciate all your work because I know this is hard work.
It has been a year of effort with the rest of the committee. We've worked hard on this and help from the Dayton and Orlando guys in tweaking our processes and coming up with the badges and the buttons and everything. It's just a tremendous feeling of accomplishment today that we have. We're just overjoyed, over the top.
Yes.
And were you around yesterday? Did you guys cover the main drawing prize yesterday afternoon?
I think we got some of that, yes.
It was amazing. I mean, folks have mentioned to us that they never heard spontaneous applause at somebody, not them, winning the grand prize. They were happy for that, just truly happy for that, for the young man that won the IC7610. That was just great.
Well,
we had to walk through the room last night. We started turning off the lights. We thought folks would get the hint, but people stuck around. We tried to get folks out because we got to empty the VBC by a certain time, and we finally had to turn off all the lights and literally walk through and say, time to go. And that's the mark of a great ham fest. When people want to stick around and talk to vendors, talk to flea market folks, there was stuff going out the door way after our close time.
The one thing I find out about Huntsville every year is people are happy. They just have such a good time here, and it's small enough that we can really visit with each other.
As you know, Bob, we have a connected hotel, the Embassy Suites, and I haven't been outside since Friday morning. I don't know about yourself. You're over there, too. It's just a great feeling, and this is something none of the big guys have. We have a connected hotel, and it's a great feeling. Like you say, people are smiling. They're happy to be here, even the ones that you know, had to hassle with the parking situation. And that's something we've got to address next year. But there were some hitches, but overall, things have gone really, really well this week.
Mark, you did a great job. We'll look forward to being back next year. But thanks for being on Ham Nation with us. We support you fully, and what a great job. So thanks to you.
Thank you for coming. And all the media coverage we get, you guys are great. And that's how we get the message out. Thanks again, Bob.
Thank you. We want everybody to be here next year. Get in your reservations because the Embassy Suite sells out really fast.
That's right. 73. Thanks.
Bye-bye for now.
And, boy, thanks to Mark and the whole crew there that helps make the Huntsville Ham Fest possible every year. And Mark is telling you the correct information there. The Embassy Suites does sell out soon. I was too late booking this year, so I had to stay next door at the new AC Hotel. And that's a real nice facility, too. But you do have to walk outside and across the street. Not very far, though, and there's other hotels in the area. I noticed Mark mentioned a moment ago that there was even some guy there that was selling flashlight kits that you could run off of dead batteries. And he couldn't remember who. Well, I can tell you who because I know the guy. It's Thomas Witherspoon with earstoourworld.org. And they have, well, their mission is to spread information to undeveloped nations and people all over the world. One of the ways they fundraise is with these little humanolights here. And you may remember this several years ago on Ham Nation. We built this. I put a dead battery in it, turned it on, and didn't turn it off for a month. And it finally ran down then. It's at etow.org. And this is a great little kit there. And Thomas was there this year. We spoke for a few moments. I don't know how many years ago I put this battery in there. Now, it hadn't been on constantly, but it still works. So, great little kit there. Well, that's what I've got for tonight from Huntsville. It was a great ham fest, and we met a lot of great friends there, some that we have not seen in a long time, some we've never seen before. So that's one of the most enjoyable parts of it, of all. And we've got Amanda is still with us here, and she has been in the chat room. Amanda, did you gather any questions for us tonight?
Well, I actually just have a specific question for each one of you, an interesting question. This was unique. When applying to be an operator for WW0WWV during the special event station, the number one question was, what does WWV mean to you? So I'm going to ask you guys. So George, why don't you answer that first? What does it mean to you? And when did you first be aware of WWV?
The best I can remember, I first became aware of WWV in 1972. When I was 16 and got a job as a nighttime, part-time DJ on a radio station. And the way that we set the clocks at the radio station is there was an old shortwave receiver that was sitting back there on the engineer's desk. And he would turn that thing on every morning on WWV and listen to it. And that's how he adjusted our electric clock there to be right on the second or close to it. That's how I first learned of it.
And Don, I'm going to guess you also learned about it in the radio broadcasting world. Is that correct?
No, before that, I got into broadcasting officially for pay in 1978, 1979. But I was studying for my ham ticket in 75. But as a kid, in the early 70s, probably late 60s, early 70s, I had a shortwave receiver. And I discovered WWV back then as a shortwave listener. And I mean, I've always been a radio junkie. You know, when I was 10, I told my mom and dad I was going to be on the radio. So I've just always been a radio junkie. So way back then, you know, when I had that shortwave receiver, I discovered WWV. And yeah, I've used it constantly to set clocks or to, you know, make sure that a radio was on frequency or to test and see what bands were open. There's just any number of uses just for the casual ham or shortwave listener for WWV. It would be a shame if we ever saw it go away.
Absolutely. And Bob? What about you? What does it mean to you?
Well, I was licensed in 1956, and we had good old analog receivers. Mine was, the first one was an SX99, and you relied upon WWV to make sure that your receiver was okay, because these receivers, they drift a little bit. So if you were going to work close to the band edge, you better find out where the band edge is. And they had calibrators in them, but that had to have a standard. And guess what? WWV was always the standard. So I used it a lot, and I still do. Even though the new receivers, you don't have to worry about it much. But still in all, it gets in your blood, I guess. So, yep, very important that they do stay with us, and I'm happy about that.
Oh, me too. And one of the other neat things, I don't know if you got to see all the pictures that we went through because you got disconnected from us, but the coolest thing I thought in those pictures was the oven just for burning the crystals right there in-house. Yep. I mean, isn't that amazing? Yep. I can't. I don't know how we managed to do that. What do you think, Bob?
Well, we actually have ovens in some of the old transmitters. And my very first 2-meter and 6-meter single sideband transmitter that I built, I was one of the first 10. I didn't know it, but I was in 1958. I was one of the first 10 to build and put on the air a kilowatt on 6-meter single sideband. Well, that crystal had to really be stable. How did I do that? I took a pair of number 47 pilot lights and taped it around on each side, put tape around it. And so my crystals were always in their own little oven. And you know how it is, you're a ham. So you have to do what you have to do. So, yes, ovens are very important to make that crystal stable.
Amazing. I can't believe it. That's awesome. That's the only question I had for tonight. So I'll go over the nets and then we can wrap it up here. And by the way, Bob, I thought your format tonight worked excellently. Let's see. Yes. Nets. We have 14,268 on 20 meters and 71,92 or thereabouts for 40. And then our D-Star net is on 14, Charlie. And we have DMR on 31,012. Join us all on all of them if you can. So with that, Bob, I'm going to guess that you're going to wrap it up tonight.
Okay, well, nice to be here. I wasn't sure. My plane got delayed 5 times Sunday. I finally got home at midnight instead of 2 in the afternoon. But I'm here and drove down to Pleasant Hope yesterday. So we're in good shape, and I'm glad everybody's having fun here on Ham Nation. So 7-3, everybody. We'll see you back here. Right here on the same channel, the same frequency. And thanks to Leo Laporte. And very, very much thanks to Victor for keeping us all going. 7-3, everybody. Bye-bye for now. Catch you over on the radio. Bop, da, 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 da. Bop.